I knew that they'd do their part. It remained for Napier to attend to his, and he'd need all the prime intelligence I could give him. I questioned Fazel and his lieutenants on every particular, where exactly the infantry would be placed, their precise numbers, 8,000 all told, how long they'd be able to stay in the field, how they communicate, what were their lines of retreat from Magdala, all the small change, in fact, and as I noted it, I was musing on how best to present it with a view to gaining the most credit. There was no question of taking my news to Napier in person. He expected me to command the Galar encirclement of Magdala, bless him, and with Theodore's ruffians infesting the northern approaches, I'd not have ventured forth for a pension anyway. So I wrote a brief and suitably modest report to say that I'd arrived at Mastiat's court, that she was an eager ally, the Wallace were fallen in and numbered off, and could be counted on to stop Theodore's southern bolt-hole, that he was camped on Islam Ghee with about 7,000 troops, but until his guns were placed, we couldn't tell whether he'd defend Magdala, offer battle, or cut and run. To be continued in our next. The weather remains fine, and please reply to the bearer of this dispatch, and make him a present of a revolver. I asked Fazel for Wadeju as my messenger because he could be trusted to reply intelligently to the sort of questions Napier would ask, and he was the kind of young hero who'd get there, through hell and high water. He was summoned, and in the presence of Fazel and co., I added the verbal messages that couldn't be written in case they fell into Theodore's hands, the number and rough disposition of the Galar force, the escape routes which Fazel thought Theodore would most likely take, and most importantly, the lie of the land. This I did by having Wadeju study the sand table and satisfy me that he could make a sketch of it from memory for Napier's benefit. I demonstrated what I thought the best route from the Bekelu to Arugi, to which Fazel and his lads gave their approval. Some commanders don't care for suggestions from below, but I knew Bob Napier would weigh mine and follow them unless he saw good reason not to. Finally, and principally for young Ahmed's benefit, I told Wadeju to assure Napier that the Queen of Wallogala had pledged her alliance in the most cordial terms, and shown me every courtesy and consideration, and we could congratulate ourselves on having the support of such an illustrious and enlightened ruler and her fine soldiery. Diplomatic butter, no more, but Ahmed took it large, clasping my hand and vowing that I must repeat it to Mama instanter, so that she could respond with similar compliments and greetings to the British Dejaz. And it was right, says he, that we should take the opportunity to inform Her Majesty that all was in train for the bottling of Theodore, so let us seek her approval as a loyal council should. I could see that Fazel felt that the less opportunity royalty got to interfere, the better, but you don't argue with a prince of the blood, even if he is your galloper. So off the five of us trooped to Her Majesty's private apartments, with Wadeju in tow. There we were informed by her doddering chamberlain that Her Majesty was unable to grant us audience at present, as she had been resting, and was now being attired by her ladies for the evening's entertainment, from which I deduced that the Tej had finally caught up with her, and she was being revived and rendered fit for public view. What entertainment, demands Ahmed, and was told, with an obsequious smirk at me, that there was to be a grand reception and feast in honour of the British Baldaraba. Capital, says Ahmed. Now, get out of my way. And such is the politeness of princes, that a moment later we were making our bows in the presence, while her handmaidens, caught unawares, tried gamely to disguise Her Majesty's condition. As I'd suspected, she'd plainly had to be roused from the arms of Bacchus, and was visibly glazed of eye and unsteady on the seat before her dressing-table, with a wench either side to lend unobtrusive support, and her handmaiden-in-chief trying to impart a little dignity by slipping a silver wand into the royal grasp. But she played up well, her head was regally erect, and she greeted us with careful courtesy. Ahmed wanted me to repeat the flowery part of my message to Napier, but I wasn't having that, and insisted Wadeju should do it, to make sure he had it pat. The lad was shocking nervous before his sovereign, but got it out slow and halting after a few false starts. Mastiat listened with solemn attention, stifling an occasional yawn, and once her silver wand slipped from her drowsy hand and was retrieved by infantry a split second ahead of cavalry. I only hoped Wadeju would get done while she could still see and sit upright. But when he'd finished, she astonished me by extending an imperious hand to him and saying slowly but clearly, "And tell the English Dejaz, also that the Queen of Gala caused the blessing of God on him and his brave soldiers.